Support for WPR comes from WIPS with Toward One Wisconsin, a conference on equity, diversity, and inclusion, May 7th and 8th in Eau Claire. Registration information and more is at t1w.org.
Support for WPR comes from the American Society of Landscape Architects Wisconsin chapter. Dedicated to reimagining the design of outdoor spaces for the well-being of all. Examples at wiasla.com.
It's 5:06, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Thanks for spending your holiday with Central Time. Today we're bringing you some of our favorite interviews from our first 6 months on the air. Later in the program, we'll be talking with a photographer who's got some great tips and tricks to get us taking better pictures and capturing those special moments.
First, back in July, we spoke with Dr. Richard Gunderman. He's a practicing physician, a professor at Indiana University, and the healthcare correspondent for The Atlantic. He wrote a piece that caught our attention called Our Undue Focus on Long Life. In the piece, he pointed out that Americans are living longer, but not necessarily better. So without using age as the gold standard, how do we assess the quality of our lives?
I began by asking about the role of longevity as a measure of how healthy we are and how good our lives are.
Well, Rob, I think we'd have to be crazy not to hope to lead reasonably long lives. So I'm certainly not arguing that we should try to hasten our demise. But on the other hand, I don't think we can really assess the quality of our lives and the lives of our children just based on how long they last.
So what should we be looking at if we're not looking at longevity, which is something which is so easy to count, how long you live? What's more important?
Well, let's appeal to world literature for a minute. One of the great works of satire in the English language is a book by Jonathan Swift called Gulliver's Travels. And in the third book of Gulliver's Travels, Gulliver describes a race of people who are immortal. They actually never die, but unfortunately they're not spared the ravages of aging. So, you know, you could say, boy, that would be terrific. I'd love to live forever. But on the other hand, if all my teeth are going to fall out and I'm going to lose my vision and not be able to rise from a seated position, after a while things might get pretty uncomfortable. So the notion is, quantity of life is a good thing, but it's not the only thing. And if we purchase quantity of life at the expense of quality of life, in some cases, we may judge that to be a bad bargain.
Well, let's look at that quality versus quantity issue. Do we in the United States, and maybe the medical profession in particular, put too much time and effort into lengthening lifespan and not enough into quality, healthy lifespan?
I've certainly seen examples of that. I'd like to think they're becoming less frequent, but, you know, there have been cases I know of in intensive care units where each team coming on shift does its best to make sure the patient doesn't expire while they're caring for them. And you end up, you know, trying to keep a patient's heart beating perhaps after the natural time when, frankly, death would be the best thing. Every single human being comes to a point in life where I think it's appropriate for life to end, and we don't want to just keep flogging our organs, our hearts and our lungs and our brains, to keep going past their appointed time. So we want to take steps to keep ourselves healthy and, you know, to lead to a ripe old age, but not try to sustain our lives beyond the point at which, for some of us, life is going to become, frankly, burdensome.
It's funny because it's such a consciousness shift to think that death isn't the worst thing that could happen to you. We think about death as being that worst thing when it sounds like you're saying, you know, quality of life, once it deteriorates to a certain point, then maybe that's worse than passing when it's time, when your body can't keep up anymore.
That's a great point, Veronica. I sometimes worry that we get so focused on prolonging our lives that we fail to think about how to make the most of each day of our lives. So there's a balance to be struck there. We want to lead reasonably long lives, but let's make sure we do everything we can to make today and tomorrow count so that we're not just leading a long life, but we're actually living fully each day. And, you know, I could wish for immortality for myself. But on the other hand, if tomorrow turns out to be a rainy day, I may reveal that I'm not too good at figuring out how to spend my Saturday afternoon.
Much less eternity.
Exactly. Yeah, if eternity is a series of Saturday afternoons with bad weather, I'm not very well equipped to make the most of it.
There's a sci-fi movie in there somewhere.
I think so.
I think you're right. And, you know, this is a theme that goes way back in human literature and human culture, the aspiration for immortality. But every generation has its thoughtful people saying, wait a minute, yeah, long life, good. But let's make sure that that life is as full and rich and alive as it can be.
Well, let's look back earlier in a lifespan when hopefully the deathbed is way off in advance. How should we be thinking, do you think, to make the most of our lives, to have them be healthy and happy?
Well, that's a fascinating question. And, you know, I'm a physician, but we probably need a wise person, a philosopher or a sage, to address that question authoritatively. But I'll tell you one thing right now. How many new people have we met in the last week? How many new friends have we made in the last year? Looking back over the last decade, how many people, in how many people's lives have we made a real difference to enrich their life? Those would be three questions we could ask ourselves that I think would tell us something important about the quality of lives we're leading. It's not just about keeping myself comfortable and secure and prosperous. It's also using whatever comfort and prosperity I enjoy to try to make a difference in the lives of other people.
Is it also about happiness? There's so much stock put in happiness these days. Happiness studies is super hot. Are we overemphasizing the happy part and maybe not emphasizing the helping part enough?
Well, I think you'd have to be crazy to argue that happiness is a bad thing, but if we think of happiness as a mood that we want for ourselves, as something that, you know, if only I ate the right diet or took the right medication, I'd be a happy person, then I think we're operating with a frankly unhealthy notion of happiness. I would want to say real happiness in life comes from being committed to other people and to the welfare and happiness of other people. And when you look at your own life that way, I think you discover that happiness isn't so much a goal we can pursue directly as a byproduct of the pursuit of things in life that really matter. You know, reading a book to your child, volunteering to coach a youth soccer team, maybe teaching Sunday school. It's going to be different for different people, but I think the deepest and most enduring happiness comes from the contributions we make to the lives of others.
Now, you're a medical guy, you're a health guy, and you're talking about a lot of philosophical stuff, and I'm wondering, when you're talking to colleagues, are they saying, Gunderman, what the heck are you talking about? Can we do the doctor stuff now?
Well, I don't think I'm viewed as a traitor within the medical profession. At least nobody's directly accused me of that. But, you know, it's, in a sense, to be a really good doctor, you've got to be more than a doctor. You've got to think about, you know, not just my patient's blood pressure or their blood sugar or how big their waistline is. You've got to recognize that these are human beings leading human lives, you know, at work, at home, in their communities. So we want to make sure that we provide good health advice, but in a way, to think well about health, we need to situate health in the larger context of the lives people lead.
Do you ever give patients advice like that? Say, yes, you've got some health issues going on, we need to address them, but have you looked at your emotional well-being and how fulfilling your life is?
Absolutely. I'm profoundly convinced that those non-medical aspects of life, how satisfied are you in your work? How would you describe the quality of your family life? When have you been able to really help and make a difference in somebody else's life? Those aren't the kind of things we can measure with a blood pressure cuff or a blood test. But my own conviction is when you get those things in order, what we might call bodily health, it often flows rather naturally from that. And if I sit around in my armchair, worried that I may get hit by a car, struck by lightning, or eat too many donuts, Even though I manage to avoid all those things, if I spend my day just in my armchair when I'm able-bodied and able to get out there and go to work and try to make a difference, then, my life is impoverished. I may be healthy according to the blood pressure cuff, but not really living, not really living fully, because I'm so concerned about my health and the bad things that might happen to me from sunlight or automobiles or, the smoke from factories nearby, that I end up not really living.
That's Dr. Richard Gunderman. We've got more of our conversation with him coming up in just a few moments. And if you'd like to tell us how you live a more fulfilling life, we'd love to hear from you. Just head on over to our Facebook page, that's Central Time on WPR, and let us know.
And coming up after 5:30, we'll talk about improving our photography skills. The holidays can be a great time to capture family memories, but despite the best intentions of the photographer, the pictures can often come out poorly and not really represent the moments they were meant to capture. We'll get some help coming up in about 15 minutes.
We'll be right back with more Central Time. First, here's a check of the latest headlines. We're talking to Dr. Richard Gunderman about longevity and health. Does living longer mean we've had a healthier life? He says, no, living long is great, but what did you do in the meantime? We'll take your calls. Our lines are full now, but you can send an email to talk@WPR.org or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We have Jerome with us to start things off in Brookfield. Hi, Jerome.
Hi, how are you doing?
Real good. What do you think of this stuff?
Well, personally, I believe that there is a strong connection between the mind and the body. If you, with regards to longevity, you can live, to be 100 years old. But if you aren't in the best shape, if you have to be on pills every day because you're sick, diabetic, or what have you, then that number doesn't matter. And on the other end, you could live to 65. But if you enjoyed your life, if you carpe diem, seize the day, or whatever you want to call it, and you live life to the fullest, then which would you rather? Which would you rather? Would you rather live to be 90, but you didn't do anything with your life, or you had a poor quality of life, or would you rather live to about 60? Would you rather live to 60, 70, but you traveled the world and you did everything that you wanted to do? There's a balance.
Gotcha. Thanks a lot, Jerome, for the call. Richard, what do you think?
I think Jerome is absolutely right. It's nice to live a long time. I think we would all want our children and grandchildren to lead long and healthy lives, but let's not be so afraid of taking risks and so caught up with protecting our lives, as in making them as long as possible, that we lose sight of what we're doing with each passing year. And that takes a somewhat different focus.
Okay, thank you so much for the call. We go to Karen in Green Bay next. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I was just calling because I guess I have kind of a great story that emphasizes this whole point. My mom spent the last 10 years of her life with Alzheimer's complicated by stroke. And you talk about quality of life. There was no quality of life. She existed. Her heart, her lungs kept functioning, but there was no other part of her there. I would rather have seen her die much younger than she did, so that she didn't have to exist like that. The other side of the coin is we just lost my dad in December, 4 days before his 90th birthday, and he was making maple syrup and hunting and had a garden, and we were getting ready to celebrate his birthday, and he was cooking and plowing ice right up until he died. He died in an accident. And that's the quality of life I want. That's the quality of life I'm going to strive for. And those are the choices that I make, as I live my life, to try to stay busy and stay active and to avoid those chronic health problems. But as we discuss longevity as a goal, you've got to consider the chronic illnesses. Some illnesses you have control of, high blood pressure, adult onset diabetes, Alzheimer's, there's not a whole lot of control you have over that. So those are just my comments.
Great. Well, thank you, Karen. Two very different stories there, and some that a lot of people have lived through, seeing relatives decline like that and standing by and watching, not being able to do anything to improve the quality of life. What about situations like that, Dr. Gunderman?
Well, my heart goes out to Karen on the suffering that she and her family and her mother must have endured for those 10 years. And, you know, we're not always going to have a chance to choose how we go out. Some of us may linger for a long time in a debilitated state. Others may, you know, die peacefully in our sleep after a full day. I'm not pretending we should choose, and I'm also not suggesting we should end anybody's life intentionally because we don't like the quality of it or think they wouldn't. That's another question. But my point would be, as we take reasonable steps to take ourselves, keep ourselves healthy, eating well, exercising, getting the appropriate amount of rest, let's always stay focused, at least in part, on the quality. And, you know, that means being engaged with friends and family and in our community and looking for opportunities, not just to protect our health, but to put our health to work, to use it. I would even say, many of us would say, I don't want to die with my health intact. I want to have really put it to use, put it to work in a way to have used up my health in an effort to try to enrich my community. And I think if we have that perspective, we're on much sounder footing in our approach to the place of life, of health in our overall life.
We'll go back to the phones now. We have John on the line in Milwaukee. John, hi.
Thank you. I have the pleasure and privilege of being one of Dr. Gunderman's former students.
No kidding.
And in keeping with how he was in the classroom, he's an incredibly bright and also very humble man. When he referred earlier in the conversation about a philosopher, because he is one. He's not only an MD, but also a PhD, and is well published in the area of philanthropy, among many others. Goes back about 5-7 years, Dr. Gunderman. You've had many students in the Master's in Philanthropy.
Well, thanks, so John. On a lighter note, the check will be in the mail, okay?
And my grades are already finalized, yeah. So I don't need to worry about that. But my reason for calling in was to say, you started to speak to this, I think, a little bit earlier, the relationship of giving, which is at the root of philanthropy. And it's not just money, in fact, or even principally that, but this idea of giving as part of living a healthy life. And would love if you could expound on that for the listeners, and I encourage all of you listeners to look him up and read some of his books. Great stuff on the subject.
Thanks, John. So tell us some about the healthy side of philanthropy.
What a privilege to get to reconnect with John over the radio like this. You know, giving is so important. If you think only about your own health, you tend to get into an attitude of taking. You know, how can I use the resources around me in order to protect my own health, whether it be food or shelter, the healthcare system. Again, we need to take care of ourselves. But I really suspect, I don't have any data to support this, that it's in giving. Giving the best of ourselves to the lives of others, that we really bring our health fully to life. And, you know, that could be in the form of writing a check to the local charitable organization, but I think that opportunity to give and make the most of ourselves is even bigger, not so much in giving of our treasure, but giving of our time and talent. So if you care deeply about your health and want to make the most of it, look around you for opportunities, people in need, people you could work with to help make the community a better place. Roll up your sleeves and get to work. That might be an hour of work. That might be an afternoon a month. But look for an opportunity to make the difference. And when you begin to think in those terms and build those kind of relationships, I have a deep, deep suspicion that you're also doing what's best for yourself.
So giving is so important, sounds like, to health and well-being. Any other advice for people who want to take what you're saying to heart and to really try to dig into their lives holistically, not just on a blood test kind of scale, but on a holistic scale? What do you think? What should people look at?
I would say, you know, there are a number of ways to get at this, but one would be try to think of a time in the last year where you felt really alive and that you really made a difference in the life of another person. Might be your spouse, a child, a friend, a colleague at work. You really made a difference in the life of another person. Try to figure out where that difference came from. Who was in the room? Who was saying what? Who was doing what? And then try to organize your days ahead for the month and the year to provide more of those kind of opportunities.
And we'll have to leave it there, but that's beautiful advice to go out on. Dr. Gunderman, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That was Dr. Richard Gunderman, professor at Indiana University and a health correspondent for The Atlantic.
Coming up after the news, we'll find out how to take better photos and create lasting memories for years to come.
And we're back tomorrow with a great live show for you. We'll take a look at the history of Boxing Day and find out why it's not celebrated here.
In our Wisconsin Legends segment, we'll talk about the snowmobile. It's easy to spot them and hear them buzzing around the snowy trails in our state. But did you know the snowmobile was invented right here in Wisconsin? We'll learn about the history of what used to be called the motor toboggan and how it evolved into what we know today as the snowmobile.
A political blogger says the Supreme Court of Wisconsin should be allowed to pick its own chief justice. He'll tell us why.
And we'll round up the top national political stories of the year. That's all coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.